Holt turned to look. The tracks, if they were tracks, were like no others that Will had seen so far. The ranger urged his horse nearer to the edge of the path and looked more closely.
He said thoughtfully. That's one I haven't shown you yet. Don't see too many of them these days, so take a good look, Will.
He swung easily down from the saddle and walked through the knee-deep snow toward the disturbance. Will followed him. What is it? The boy asked.
Wild boar, said Holt briefly. And a big one.
Will glanced nervously around them. He mightn't know what a wild boar's tracks looked like in the snow, but he knew enough about the creatures to know they were very, very dangerous. Holt noticed the look and made a reassuring movement with his hand.
Relax, he said. He's nowhere near us.
Can you tell that from the tracks? Will asked. He stared, fascinated, at the snow. The deep ruts and furrows had obviously been made by a very large animal, and it looked as if it were a very large, very angry animal.
No, said Holt evenly. I can tell it from our horses. If a boar that size were anywhere in the district, those two would be snuffing and pawing and whinnying so hard we wouldn't be able to hear ourselves think.
Oh, said Will, feeling a little foolish. He relaxed the grip that he'd taken on his bow. However, in spite of the ranger's assurances, he couldn't resist taking just one more look around behind them. And as he did so, his heart began pounding faster and faster. The thick undergrowth on the other side of the track was moving ever so slightly. Normally, he might have passed the movement off as due to the breeze, but his training with Holt had heightened his reasoning and his observation. At the moment, there was no breeze, not the slightest breath. But still, the bushes continued to move. Will's hand went slowly to his quiver, moving deliberately so as to avoid startling the creature in the bushes. He drew an arrow and placed it on the string of his bow. Holt? He tried to keep his voice down, but couldn't prevent it from quaking just a little. He wondered if his bow would stop a charging boar. He didn't think so. Holt looked around, his gaze taking in the arrow knocked to Will's bowstring, and noting the direction in which Will was looking.
I hope you're not thinking of shooting the poor old farmer who's hiding behind those bushes, he said seriously.
Yet he pitched his voice so that it carried clearly across the track to the thick clump of bushes on the other side. Instantly, there was a scuffle of movement from the bush, and Will heard a nervous voice crying out,
Don't shoot, good sir! Please don't shoot! It's only me!
The bushes parted as a dishevelled and frightened-looking old man stood up and hurried forward. His haste was his undoing, however, as his foot caught in a tangle of underbrush, and he sprawled forward onto the snow. He scrambled awkwardly to his feet, hands held out, palms first, to show that he carried no weapons. As he came, he continued a non-stop babble of words.
Only me, sir! No need for shooting, sir! Only me, I swear, and I'm no danger to the likes of you!
He hurried forward into the centre of the track, his eyes fixed on the bow in Will's hands and the gleaming, razor-sharp tip of the arrow. Slowly, Will released the tension on the string and lowered the bow as he took a closer look at the interloper. He was skinny in the extreme. Dressed in a ragged and dirty farmer's smock, he had long, awkward arms and legs, and knobby elbows and knees. His beard was grey and matted, and he was going bald on top of his head. The man stopped a few metres from them, and smiled nervously at the two cloaked figures.
Only me, he repeated one last time.
18. Will couldn't help smiling to himself. Anything less like a ferocious, charging wild boar he couldn't imagine.
How did you know he was there?
he asked Halt in a soft voice. The ranger shrugged.
Saw him a few minutes ago.
You'll learn eventually to sense when someone's watching you. Then you know to look for them.
Will shook his head in admiration. Halt's powers of observation were uncanny. No wonder people at the castle held him in such awe.
Now then, Halt said sternly, why are you skulking there? Who told you to spy on us?
The old man rubbed his hands nervously together, his eyes flicking from Halt's forbidding expression to the arrow tip, lowered now, but still knocked to the string on Will's bow.
Not spying, sir! No, no, not spying! I heard you coming and thought you was that monster Porker coming back!
Halt's eyebrows drew together.
You thought I was a wild boar? He asked.
Again the farmer shook his head.
No, 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 he gabbled. Leastways, not once I'd saw you. But then I wasn't sure who you might be. Could be bandits, like.
What are you doing here? Halt asked.
You're not a local, are you?
The farmer, anxious to please, shook his head once again.
Come from over Willow Tree Creek, I do, he said. Been trailing that porker and hoping to find someone as could turn him into bacon.
Halt was suddenly vitally interested. He dropped the mock severe tone in which he'd been talking.
You've seen the boar, then? He asked,
and the farmer rubbed his hands again and looked fearfully around, as if nervous that the porker would appear from the trees any minute.
Seen him? Heard him? Don't want to see him no more. He's a bad 'un, sir. Mark my words.
Halt glanced back at the tracks again.
He's certainly a big one anyway, he mused. And evil, sir, the farmer went on. That 'un has a real devil of a temper in him. Why, he'd as soon tear up a man or a horse as have his breakfast, he would. So, what did you have in mind for him? Halt asked, then added, what's your name, by the way?
The farmer bobbed his head and knuckled his forehead in salute.
Peter, sir. Salt Peter, they calls me. On account of, I likes a little salt on my meat, I do.
Halt nodded.
I'm sure you do, he said patiently. But what were you hoping to do about this boar?
Salt Peter scratched his head and looked a little lost.
Don't rightly know. Hoped maybe I'd find a soldier or a warrior or a knight to get rid of him. Or maybe a ranger, he added as an afterthought.
Will grinned. Halt stood up from where he'd gone down on one knee to examine the tracks in the snow. He dusted a little snow from his knee and walked back to where Salt Peter stood, nervously shifting from one foot to another.
Has he been causing a lot of trouble? The ranger asked,
and the old farmer nodded rapidly several times.
That he has, sir, that he has. Killed 3 dogs. Tore up fields and fences, he has. And as near as anything, killed my son-in-law when he tried to stop him. Like I said, sir, he's a bad 'un.
Halt rubbed his chin thoughtfully.
He said. Well, there's no question that we'd better do something about it.
He looked up at the sun, sitting low to the horizon in the western sky, then turned to Will.
How much daylight would you say is left, Will?
Will studied the position of the sun. These days, Halt never missed an opportunity to teach him or question him or test his knowledge and developing skills. He knew it was best to consider carefully before making an answer. Halt preferred accurate replies, not fast ones.
A little over an hour, Will said.
He saw Halt's eyebrows draw together in a frown, and remembered that the ranger also disliked being answered with a question.
Are you asking me or telling me? Halt said.
Will shook his head, annoyed at himself. A little over an hour, he replied more confidently, and this time the ranger nodded agreement.
Correct.
He turned to the old farmer again.
Very well, Salt Peter. I want you to take a message to Baron Harold. Baron Harold? The farmer asked nervously. Holt frowned again. See what you've done, he said to Will. You've got him answering questions with questions now.
Sorry, Will mumbled, grinning in spite of himself.
Holt shook his head and continued speaking to Salt Peter.
That's right, Baron Harold. You'll find his castle a couple of kilometres along this track.
Salt Peter peered under one hand, looking along the track as if he could see the castle already.
A castle, you say? He said in a wondering voice. I've never seen a castle.
Holt sighed impatiently. Keeping this old chatterbox's mind on the subject was beginning to make him short-tempered.
That's right, a castle. Now, go to the guard at the gate. Is it a big castle?
Asked the old fellow.
It's a huge castle! Holt roared at him.
Salt Peter bounded back in fright. He had a hurt look on his face.
No need to bellow, young man, he said huffily. I were only asking, is all. Well then, stop interrupting me, said the ranger. We're wasting time here. Now, are you listening?
Salt Peter nodded.
Good, Holt continued. Go to the guard on the gate and say you have a message from Holt for Baron Harold.
A look of recognition spread across the old man's face.
Holt? He asked. Not the ranger, Holt? Yes, replied Holt wearily. The ranger, Holt.
The one who led the ambush on Morgareth's Wargulls? Asked Salt Peter.
The same, said Holt, in a dangerously low voice.
Salt Peter looked around him.
Well, he said, where is he? I'm Holt, the ranger thundered at him, placing his face a few centimetres from Salt Peter's as he did so. Again the old farmer recoiled a few steps. Then he gathered his courage and shook his head in disbelief. Now, 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 he said definitely. You can't be him. Why, the ranger Holt is as tall as two men, and as broad. A giant of a man he is. Brave, fierce in battle he is. You couldn't be him.
Holt turned away, trying to regain his temper. Will couldn't help the smile breaking out on his face again.
I am Holt, said the ranger,
spacing his words out so that Salt Peter couldn't make any mistake.
I was taller when I was young, and a lot broader, but now I'm this size.
He thrust his glittering eyes close to the farmer's and glared at him.
Do you understand? Well, if you say so, said Salt Peter.
He still didn't believe the ranger. But there was a very dangerous gleam in Holt's eyes that warned him it would not be wise to disagree any further.
Good, said Holt icily. Now, tell the Baron that Holt and Will...
Salt Peter opened his mouth to ask another question. Holt clamped his hand over the old man's mouth immediately and pointed to where Will stood beside Tug.
That's Will there.
Salt Peter nodded, his eyes wide over the hand that was clamped firmly over his mouth, stopping any further questions or interruptions. The ranger continued,
Tell him, Holt and Will are tracking a wild boar. When we find its lair, we'll return to the castle. In the meantime, the Baron should gather his men for a hunt tomorrow morning.
He slowly took his hand down from the farmer's mouth.
Have you got all that? The ranger asked.
Salt Peter nodded carefully.
Then repeat it back to me, Holt prompted. Go to the castle. Tell the gate guard I have a message from you, Holt, for the Baron. Tell the Baron that you, Holt, and him, Will, are tracking a wild boar to find its lair. Tell him to have his men ready for a hunt tomorrow.
Good, said Holt.
He gestured to Will, and the two of them swung back into their saddles. Salt Peter stood uncertainly on the track, looking up at them.
Off you go,
said Holt, pointing in the direction of the castle. The old farmer went a few paces. Then, when he judged he was at a safe distance, he turned around and called back at the grim-faced ranger.
"I don't believes you, you know. Nobody grows shorter and thinner."
Holt sighed and turned his horse away into the forest. 19. They rode slowly through the failing light, leaning sideways in their saddles to follow the trail left by the boar. They had no trouble tracking him. The huge body had left a deep trench in the thick snow. Even without the snow, Will thought, it would have been easy. The boar was obviously in a very bad temper. It had slashed at the surrounding trees and shrubs with its tusks as it went, leaving a clear-cut path of destruction through the forest. "Halt," he said tentatively, when they had gone a kilometre or so into the dense trees. "Hm?" said Halt, a little absently. "Why bother the Baron? Couldn't we simply kill the boar with our bows?" Halt shook his head.
"He's a big one, Will. You can see the size of the trail he's left. We could take half a dozen arrows to kill him, and even then he'd take time to die. With a brute like this, it's better to make sure."
"How do we do that?"
Holt looked up for a second. "I suppose you've never seen a boar hunt."
Will shook his head. Holt reined in for a few seconds to explain, and Will brought Tug to a stop beside him.
"Well, first," said the ranger, "we'll need dogs. That's another reason why we can't simply finish him off with our bows. When we find him, he'll have most likely gone to ground in a thicket or in dense bushes where we can't get at him. The dogs will drive him out, and we'll have a ring of men around the lair with boar spears."
"And they throw them at him?" Will asked. Holt shook his head.
"Not if they have any brains," he said.
"The boar spear is more than 2 metres long, with a double-sided blade and a crosspiece set behind the blade. The idea is to make the boar charge at the spearman. Then he sets the butt of the spear in the ground and lets the boar run onto it. The crosspiece stops the boar running right down the shaft and getting the spearman."
Will looked doubtful. "That sounds dangerous."
The ranger nodded. "It is, but men like the Baron and Sir Rodney and the other knights love it. They wouldn't miss the chance of a boar hunt for worlds."
"What about you?" asked Will. "Will you have a boar spear?"
Holt shook his head. "I'll be sitting right here on Abelard," he said, "and you'll be on Tug, in case the boar breaks through the ring of men around him. Or in case he's just wounded and gets away."
"What do we do if that happens?" Will asked.
"We run him down before he can go to ground again," said Holt grimly. "And then we kill him with our bows."
The following day was a Saturday, and after breakfast, the Battle School students were free to spend the day as they pleased. In Horace's case, this usually meant trying to stay out of sight whenever Alda, Bryn and Jerome came looking for him. But lately, they'd realised he was avoiding them and had taken to waiting for him outside the mess hall. As he came out onto the parade ground this morning, he saw them waiting, smiling at him. He hesitated. It was too late to turn back. With a sinking heart, he continued on toward them.
"Horace!"
He was startled by a voice coming from right behind him. He turned and saw Sir Rodney watching him, a curious look in his eyes as he glanced at the 3 second-year cadets waiting in the yard. Horace wondered if the battlemaster knew about the treatment he was getting. He assumed he did. Horace guessed it was part of the toughening process of battle school.
"Sir,"
he replied, wondering what he'd done wrong. Rodney's features softened, and he smiled at the young man. He seemed extraordinarily pleased about something.
"Relax, Horace. It's Saturday after all. Ever been on a boar hunt?"
No, sir. In spite of Sir Rodney's invitation to relax, he remained stiffly at attention.
Time you did, then. Draw a boar spear and hunting knife from the armoury. Have Ulf assign you a horse, and report back here in 20 minutes.
Yes, sir, Horace replied. Sir Rodney rubbed his hands together with evident pleasure.
Seems Hort and his apprentice have scared us up a wild boar. Time we all had a bit of fun.
He grinned encouragingly at the apprentice, then strode away eagerly to get his own equipment ready. When Horace turned back to the yard, he noticed that Alder, Bryn and Jerome were nowhere to be seen. He might have thought more about why the three bullies would disappear when Sir Rodney was around, but he had too much on his mind, wondering what he'd be expected to do in a boar hunt. It was mid-morning by the time Hort led the hunting party to the boar's lair. The huge animal had gone to ground in a dense clump of undergrowth deep inside the forest. Hort and Will had found the hiding place just before dark the previous evening. Now, as they approached, Hort made a signal, and the Baron and his hunters dismounted, leaving their horses in the care of one of the stable hands who had accompanied them. They covered the last few hundred metres on foot. Hort and Will were the only two who remained on horseback. There were 15 hunters in all, each one armed with a boar spear of the type Hort had described. They spread out in a wide circle as they came closer to the boar's lair. Will was a little surprised to recognise Horace as one of the hunting group. He was the only apprentice warrior in the party. All the others were knights. With 100 metres to go, Hort held up his hand, signalling the hunters to stop. He urged Abelard into a gentle trot and crossed to where Will sat nervously astride Tug. The little horse was moving restlessly as he scented the presence of the boar.
"Remember," the ranger said quietly to Will, "if you have to shoot, aim for a spot just behind the left shoulder. A clean shot to the heart will be your only chance to stop him if he's charging."
Will nodded, licking his dry lips nervously. He reached forward and comforted Tug with a quick pat on the neck. The little horse tossed his head in response to his master's touch.
"And stay close to the Baron," Hort reminded him,
before moving to resume his position on the opposite side of the circle of hunters. Hort was in the position of most danger, accompanying the hunters who were least experienced, and therefore most likely to make a mistake. If the boar broke through the ring on his side, he would be responsible for chasing it down and killing it. He had assigned Will to stay with the Baron and the more experienced of the hunters, where there was less likely to be trouble. This placed him close to Horace as well. Sir Rodney had positioned the apprentice between himself and the Baron. After all, this was the boy's first hunt, and the battlemaster didn't want to take any undue risks. Horace was there to watch and learn. If the boar charged in their direction, he was to let the Baron or Sir Rodney take care of it. Horace glanced up once, making eye contact with Will. There was no animosity in the look. In fact, he gave the ranger's apprentice a strained half-smile. Will realised, watching Horace lick his lips over and over again, that the other boy was every bit as nervous as he was himself. Hort signalled again, and the circle began closing in on the thicket. As the circle became smaller, Will lost sight of his teacher and the other men on the far side of the boar's lair. He knew, from Tug's continued nervousness, that the boar must be inside the bushes still. But Tug was well trained, and continued to move in as his rider urged him gently forward. A deep, roaring sound came from inside the thicket, and Will's hair stood on end. He'd never heard the cry of an angry wild boar before. The noise was halfway between a grunt and a scream, and for a moment the hunters hesitated.
"He's in there, all right," called the Baron, grinning at Will with excitement. "Let's hope he comes out on our side, eh, boys?"
Will wasn't at all sure that he wanted the boar to come charging out on their side of the thicket. He thought that he'd like it very well if it went the other way. But the Baron and Sir Rodney were both grinning like schoolboys as they readied their boar spears. They were enjoying this, just as Hort had said they would. Quickly, Will unslung his bow from across his shoulders and fitted an arrow to the string. He fingered the tip for a moment, making sure it was still razor sharp. His throat was dry. He wasn't sure that he would be able to talk if anyone spoke to him. The dogs plunged against their restraining leashes, setting the echoes awake in the forest with their excited baying. It was their noise that had aroused the boar. Now, as they continued to give voice, Will could hear the huge animal slashing and cutting at the trees and shrubs in its lair, with its long tusks. The Baron turned to Bert, his dog handler, and made a hand signal for the hounds to be released. The big, powerful animals were gone almost instantly, flashing across the cleared space to the thicket and disappearing inside. They were savage, heavily built beasts, bred specifically for the purpose of hunting boar. The noise from the thicket was indescribable. The furious baying of the dogs was joined by the blood-chilling screams of the angry boar. There was a crashing and snapping of bushes and young saplings. The very thicket seemed to shake. Then, suddenly, the boar was in the clear. He came out halfway around the circle, between the points where Will and Halt were stationed. With an infuriated scream, he threw off one of the dogs that still clung to him, paused a moment, then charged at the hunters with blinding speed. The young knight, directly in front of the boar's charge, didn't hesitate. He dropped to one knee, bracing the butt end of his spear into the ground and presenting the gleaming point to the charging animal. The boar had no chance to turn. His own rush carried him onto the spearhead. He plunged upward, screaming in pain and fury, trying to dislodge the killing piece of steel. But the young knight held grimly to the spear, holding it firmly against the ground and giving the enraged animal no chance to throw it free. Will watched with wide-eyed alarm as the stout ash shaft of the spear bent like a bow under the weight of the boar's rush. Then the carefully sharpened tip penetrated to the animal's heart, and it was all over. With one last screaming roar, the huge boar toppled sideways and lay dead. The matted body was almost as large as a horse's, and every inch was solid muscle. The tusks, harmless now in death, curved back over his ferocious snout. They were stained with the earth that he'd ripped up in his fury, and with the blood of at least one of the dogs. Will looked at the massive body and shuddered. If this was a wild boar, he thought, he wasn't in any hurry to see another one. 20. The other hunters crowded around the young knight who had made the kill, congratulating him and patting his back. Baron Arold started across toward him, but paused beside Tug, looking up to Will as he spoke.
"You won't see another that size in a long time, Will," he said gruffly. "Pity he didn't come our way. I would have liked a trophy like that for myself."
He continued on his way toward Sir Rodney, who was already with the group of warriors around the dead boar. Consequently, Will found himself, for the first time in some weeks, face to face with Horace. There was an awkward pause, with neither boy willing to make the first move. Horace, excited by the events of the morning, his heart still pounding with the thrill of fear he'd felt when the boar first appeared, wanted to share the moment with Will. In the light of what they had just seen, their childish squabble seemed unimportant, and now he felt badly about his behaviour on that day 6 weeks ago. But he couldn't find the words to express his feelings, and he saw no encouragement to do so in Will's set features. So, with a slight shrug, he started to step past Tug to go and congratulate the young hunter. As he did so, the pony stiffened and pricked his ears, giving a warning neigh. Will looked back at the thicket, and his blood seemed to freeze in his veins. There, standing just outside the shelter of the bushes, was another boar, even larger than the one which now lay dead in the snow. "Look out!" he cried, as the huge beast slashed at the earth with its tusks. It was a bad situation. The line of hunters had broken up, most of them having moved over to marvel at the size of the dead boar and to praise its killer. Only Will and Horace remained in the path of the second boar, mainly, Will realized, because Horace had hesitated for those few vital seconds. Horace spun around at Will's shout. He looked at Will, then swung to look at the new danger. The boar lowered his head, tore at the ground again, and charged. It all happened with terrifying speed. One moment, the huge animal was ripping the ground with its tusks. The next, it was hurtling toward them. Placing himself between Will and the boar, Horace turned without hesitation to face it, setting his spear as Sir Rodney and the Baron had showed him. But as he did so, his foot slipped on an icy patch in the snow, and he sprawled helplessly onto his side, the long spear falling from his grasp. There was not a second to lose. Horace lay helpless before those murderous tusks. Will kicked his feet clear of the stirrups and dropped to the ground, sighting and drawing back the bowstring even as he did so. He knew his small bow would have no chance of stopping the boar's maddened rush. All he could hope to do was to distract the maddened animal, to turn it away from the helpless boy on the ground. He fired and instantly ran to one side, away from the fallen apprentice. He yelled at the top of his lungs and fired again. The arrows stuck out of the boar's thick hide like needles in a pincushion. They did it no serious harm, but the pain of them burned through the animal like a hot knife. Its red, angry eyes fastened on the small, capering figure to one side, and, furiously, it swung after Will. There was no time to fire again. Horace was safe for the moment. Now Will himself was in danger. He sprinted for the shelter of a tree and ducked behind it, just in time. The boar's enraged charge carried it straight into the trunk of the tree. Its huge body crashed against the trunk, shaking it to its roots, sending showers of snow cascading out of its upper branches. Amazingly, the boar seemed unaffected by the crash. It backed up a few paces and charged at Will again. The boy darted around the tree trunk again, narrowly avoiding the slashing tusks as the boar thundered by. Screaming in fury, the huge animal spun in its tracks, skidding in the snow, and came at him again. This time, it came more slowly, giving Will no chance to dart to one side at the last moment. The boar came at a trot, fury in its red eyes, tusks slashing from side to side, its hot breath steaming in the freezing winter air. Behind him, Will could hear the shouts of the hunters, but he knew they'd arrive too late to help him. He knocked another arrow, knowing that he had no chance of hitting a vital spot as the pig came at him head-on. Then, there was a thud of muffled hooves on the snow, and a small shaggy shape was driving toward the furious monster. "Now, Tug!" Will screamed, in an agony of fear for his horse. But the pony charged at the huge boar, spinning in his tracks and lashing out with his rear hooves as he came within range. Tug's rear hooves caught the pig in the ribs and, with all the force of the pony's upper legs behind it, sent the boar rolling sideways in the snow. The boar was up in an instant, even more furious than before. The pony had caught him off balance, but the kick had done no serious damage. Now the boar slashed and cut at Tug, as the little pony neighed in fear and danced sideways out of the reach of those razor-sharp tusks. "Tug! Get clear!" Will screamed again. His heart was in his throat. If those tusks caught the vulnerable tendons in the horse's lower legs, Tug would be crippled for life. He couldn't stand by and watch his horse put himself in such peril for his master. He drew and fired again, and, dragging the long ranger knife from his belt, charged across the snow at the huge, furious beast. The third arrow struck the pig in the side. Again he had missed a vulnerable spot and only wounded the monster. He yelled at it as he ran, screaming for Tug to get clear. The boar saw him coming, recognizing the small figure that had first driven it to such fury. Its red, hate-filled eyes fastened upon him, and its head lowered for a final, killing charge. Will saw the muscles bunch in the massive hindquarters. He was too far from cover to run. He'd have to face the charge here in the open. He dropped to one knee and, hopelessly, held out the keen-bladed ranger knife in front of him as the boar charged. Dimly, he heard Horace's hoarse cry as the apprentice warrior charged forward to help him, his spear at the ready. Then a deep, whistling hiss cut across the sound of the boar's hooves, followed by a solid, meaty smack. The boar reared up in mid-stride, twisting in sudden agony, and fell, dead as a stone, in the snow. Holt's heavy-shafted, long arrow was almost buried in its side, driven there by the full power of the ranger's mighty longbow. He'd struck the charging monster right behind the left shoulder, driving the head of the arrow into and through the pig's massive heart. A perfect shot. Holt reined in Abelard in a shower of snow and hurled himself to the ground, throwing his arms around the shaking boy. Will, overcome with relief, buried his face into the rough cloth of the ranger's cloak. He didn't want anyone to see the tears of relief that were streaming down his face. Gently, Holt took the knife from Will's hand. "What on earth were you hoping to do with this?" he asked. Will simply shook his head. He couldn't speak. He felt Tug's soft muzzle butting gently against him and looked up into the big, intelligent eyes. Then it was all noise and confusion as the hunters gathered around, marvelling at the size of the second boar and slapping Will on the back for his courage. He stood among them, a small figure, ashamed still of the tears that slid down his cheeks, no matter how hard he tried to stop them. He felt a hand on his shoulder and turned to find he was looking into Horace's eyes, and the apprentice warrior was shaking his head slowly in admiration and disbelief. "You saved my life," he said. "That was the bravest thing I've ever seen." Will tried to shrug the other boy's thanks aside, but Horace pressed on. He remembered all the times in the past when he'd teased Will, when he'd bullied him. Now, acting instinctively, the smaller boy had saved him from those murderous, slashing tusks. It said something for Horace's growing maturity that he had forgotten his own instinctive action when he had placed himself between the charging boar and the apprentice ranger. "But why, Will? After all, we..." He couldn't bring himself to finish the statement, but Will somehow knew what was in his mind. "Horace, we may have fought in the past," he said, "but I don't hate you. I never hated you." Horace nodded once, a look of understanding coming over his face. Then he seemed to come to a decision. "I owe you my life, Will," he said in a determined voice. "I'll never forget that debt. If ever you need a friend, if ever you need help, you can call on me." The two boys faced each other for a moment. Then Horace thrust out his hand and Will took it. The circle of knights around them was silent, witnessing, but not wanting to interrupt this important moment for the two boys. Then Baron Arold stepped forward and put his arms around them both.
"Well said, both of you," he said heartily,
and the knights chorused their assent. The Baron grinned delightedly. It had been a perfect morning, all told. A bit of excitement, two huge boars killed, and now two of his wards forging the sort of special bond that only came from shared danger.
"We've got two fine young men here," he said to the group at large,
and again there was that hearty chorus of assent.
"Holt, Rodney, you can both be proud of your apprentices."
"Indeed we are, my lord," Sir Rodney replied.
He nodded approvingly at Horace,
He'd seen the way the boy had turned without hesitation to face the charge, and he approved of Horace's open offer of friendship to Will. He remembered all too well seeing them fighting on harvest day. It seemed such childish squabbles were behind them now, and he felt a deep satisfaction that he had chosen Horace for battle school. Holt, for his part, said nothing. But when Will turned to look at his mentor, the grizzled ranger met his eye and simply nodded. And that, Will knew, was the equivalent of 3 hearty cheers from Holt.
21. In the days following the boar hunt, Will noticed a change in the way he was treated. There was a certain deference, even respect, in the way people spoke to him and looked at him as he passed. It was most noticeable among the people of the village. Being simple folk, with rather limited boundaries to their day-to-day lives, they tended to glamorize and exaggerate any event that was in any way out of the ordinary. By the end of the first week, the events of the hunt had been so blown out of proportion that they had Will single-handedly killing both boars as they charged out of the thicket. A couple of days after that, to hear the story related, you could almost believe that he had accomplished the feat with one arrow, firing it clean through the first boar and into the heart of the second. "I really didn't do too much at all," he said to Holt one evening, as they sat by the fire in the warm little cottage they shared on the edge of the forest. "I mean, it's not as if I thought it through and decided to do it. It just sort of happened. And after all, you killed the boar, not me." Holt merely nodded, staring fixedly at the leaping yellow flames in the grate. "People will think what they want to," he said quietly. "Never take too much notice of it." Nevertheless, Will was troubled by the adulation. He felt people were making an altogether too big thing out of it all. He would have enjoyed the respect if it had been based on what had actually happened. In his heart, he felt he had done something worthwhile, and perhaps even honourable. But he was being lionized for a totally fictional account of events, and, being an essentially honest person, he couldn't really take any pride in that. He also felt a little embarrassed, because he was one of the few people who had noticed Horace's original, instinctively courageous action, placing himself between the charging boar and Will and Tug. Will had mentioned this last fact to Holt. He felt that perhaps the ranger might have an opportunity to appraise Sir Rodney of Horace's unselfish action. But his teacher had merely nodded and said briefly, "Sir Rodney knows. He doesn't miss much. He's got a little more up top than the average bash and whacker." And with that, Will had to be content. Around the castle, with the knights from the battle school and the various craftmasters and apprentices, the attitudes were different. There, Will enjoyed a simple acceptance and the recognition of the fact that he had done well. He noticed that people tended to know his name now, so that they greeted him as well as Holt when the two of them had business in the castle grounds. The Baron himself was friendlier than ever. It was a source of pride to him to see one of his castle wards acquit himself well. The one person Will would have liked to discuss it all with was Horace himself. But as their paths seldom crossed, the opportunity hadn't arisen. He wanted to make sure that the warrior apprentice knew that Will set no store by the ridiculous stories that had swept the village, and he hoped that his former wardmate knew he had done nothing to spread the rumours. In the meantime, Will's lessons and training proceeded at an accelerated pace. In a month's time, Holt had told him, they would be leaving for the Gathering, an annual event in the Rangers' calendar. This was the time when all 50 rangers came together to exchange news, to discuss any problems that might have arisen throughout the kingdom, and to make plans. Of greater importance to Will, it was also the time when apprentices were assessed, to see if they were fit to progress to the next year of their training.
It was bad luck for Will that he had been in training for only 7 months. If he didn't pass the assessment at this year's gathering, he would have to wait another year until the next opportunity arose. As a result, he practiced and practiced from dawn till dusk each day. The idea of a Saturday holiday was a long-forgotten luxury to him. He fired arrow after arrow into targets of different sizes, in different conditions, from standing, kneeling, sitting positions. He even fired from hidden positions in trees. And he practiced with his knives, standing to throw, kneeling, sitting, diving to the left, diving to the right. He practiced throwing the larger of the two knives, so that it struck its target, hilt first. After all, as Holt said, sometimes you only needed to stun the person you were throwing at, so it was a good idea to know how to do it. He practiced his stealth skills, learning to stay stock still, even when he was sure that he'd been discovered, and learning that all too often. People simply didn't notice him, until he actually did move and gave the game away. He learned the trick that searchers would use, letting their gaze pass over a spot, and then flicking back to it instantly to catch any slight movement. He learned about sweepers, the rear scouts, who would follow silently behind a party on the move to catch out anyone who might have remained unseen, then broken cover when the party had gone past. He worked with Tug, strengthening the bond and affection that had taken root so quickly between the two of them. He learned to use the little horse's extra senses of smell and hearing to give him warning of any danger, and he learned the signals that the horse was trained to send to its rider. So it was little wonder that, at the end of the day, Will had no inclination to walk up the winding path that led to Castle Redmond and find Horace, so that he could discuss things with him. He accepted that, sooner or later, the chance would come. In the meantime, he could only hope that Horace was being given credit for his actions by Sir Rodney and the other members of the Battle School. Unfortunately for Horace, it seemed that nothing could be further from the truth. Sir Rodney was puzzled by the muscular young apprentice. He seemed to have all the qualities that the Battle School was looking for. He was brave. He followed orders immediately. And he was still showing extraordinary skill in his weapons training. But his classwork was below standard. Assignments were handed in late or sloppily finished. He seemed to have trouble paying attention to his instructors, as if he were distracted all the time. On top of that, it was suspected that he had a predilection for fighting. None of the staff had ever witnessed him fighting, but he was often seen to be sporting bruises and minor contusions, and he seemed to have made no close friends among his classmates. On the contrary, they took pains to steer clear of him. It all served to create a picture of an argumentative, antisocial, lazy recruit, who had a certain amount of skill at arms. All things considered, and with a great deal of reluctance, the battlemaster was beginning to feel that he would have to expel Horace from battle school. All the evidence seemed to point in that direction. Yet his instincts told him he was wrong, that there was some other factor he wasn't aware of. In point of fact, there were three other factors: Alder, Bryn, and Jerome. And even as the battlemaster was considering the future of his newest recruit, they had Horace surrounded once more. It seemed that each time Horace managed to find a place where he could escape their attentions, the three older students tracked him down. Of course, this wasn't difficult for them, as they had a network of spies and informants among the other younger boys who were afraid of them, both in and outside the battle school. This time, they had cornered Horace behind the armory, in a quiet spot that he had discovered a few days before. He was hemmed in against the stone wall of the armory building, the three bullies standing in a half-circle before him. Each of them carried a thick cane, and Alder had a piece of heavy sacking folded over one arm.
"We've been looking for you, baby," said Alder.
Horace said nothing. His eyes shifted from one to the other, as he wondered which of them would be the first to make a move.
"Baby's made a fool of us," Bryn said. "Made a fool of the entire battle school."
That was Jerome. Horace frowned, puzzled by their words. He had no idea what they were talking about.
Alder's next statement made it clear. "Baby had to be rescued from the big bad boar," he said. "By a little creeping apprentice sneaker," Bryn added, the sneer heavy in his tone. "And that makes us all look bad."
Jerome shoved him against the shoulder as he spoke, pushing him back against the rough stone of the wall. His face was red and angry, and Horace knew he was building himself up for something. Horace's hands bunched into fists at his side. Jerome saw the action.
"Don't threaten me, baby. Time you learned a lesson."
He stepped forward threateningly. Horace turned to face him, and in the same instant, knew he had made a mistake. Jerome's move was a feint. The real attack came from Alder, who whipped a heavy Hessian sack over Horace's head before he could resist, pulling a draw cord tight so that he was contained from the waist up, blinded and helpless. He felt several loops of the draw cord falling over his shoulders to fasten it. Then the blows began. He staggered blindly, helpless to defend himself, as the three boys rained blows down on him from the heavy canes they'd been carrying. He blundered into the wall and fell, unable to break his fall, with his arms immobilized by his side. The blows continued, falling on his unprotected head, his arms and his legs, as the three boys continued their mindless litany of hate.
"Call for the sneaker to save you now, baby.
This is for making us all look like fools. Learn respect for your battle school, baby."
On and on it went, as he writhed on the ground, trying in vain to escape the blows. It was the worst beating they had ever given him, and they continued until gradually, mercifully, he fell still, semi-conscious. They each hit him a few more times. Then Alder dragged the sack clear. Horace drew in one giant, shuddering breath of fresh air. He ached and hurt viciously in every part of his body. From a long distance away, he heard Bryn's voice.
"Now let's teach the sneaker the same lesson."
The others laughed, and he heard them moving away. He groaned softly, longing for the release of unconsciousness, wanting to let himself sink into its dark, welcoming arms, so that the pain would go away, at least for a while. Then the full import of Bryn's words struck him. They were going to give the same treatment to Will, for the ridiculous reason that they felt his action in saving Horace had somehow belittled them and their battle school. With a gigantic effort, he pushed the welcoming folds of darkness back and struggled to his feet, moaning with the pain, chest heaving, head spinning, as he supported himself against the wall. He remembered his promise to Will.
"If you ever need a friend, you can call on me."
It was time to make good on the promise. 22. Will was in the open meadow behind Halt's cottage, practicing. He had four targets set up at different ranges, and was alternating his shots at random between the four of them, never firing at the same one twice in a row. Halt had set the exercise for him before he had gone to the Baron's office to discuss a dispatch that had come in from the King.
"If you fire twice at the same target," he had said, "you'll begin to rely on the first shot to determine your direction and elevation. That way, you'll never learn to shoot instinctively. You'll always need to fire a sighting shot first."
Will knew his teacher was right, but that didn't make the exercise any easier. To add to the difficulty, Halt had stipulated that he should let no more than 5 seconds elapse between each shot. Frowning in concentration, he let the last 5 arrows of a set go.
One after the other, in rapid succession, they flashed across the meadow, thudding into the targets. Will, his quiver empty for the 10th time that morning, stopped to survey the results. He nodded in satisfaction. Every arrow had hit a target, and most of them were clustered in the inner ring or the bullseye itself. It was shooting of an exceptionally high quality, and it proved to him the value of constant practice. He wasn't to know it, of course, but there were already few archers in the kingdom, outside of the Ranger Corps, who could have matched him. Even the archers in the King's army weren't trained to shoot with such individual speed and accuracy. They were trained to fire as a group, sending a mass of arrows against an attacking force. As a result, their training concentrated more on coordinated actions, so that all arrows were fired simultaneously. He had just set the bow down, preparatory to recovering his arrows, when the sound of a footstep behind him made him turn. He was a little surprised to see three battle school apprentices watching him, their red surcoats marking them as second-year trainees. He didn't recognize any of them, but he nodded a friendly greeting. "Good morning," he said. "What brings you down here?" It was unusual to find battle school apprentices this far from the castle. He noted the thick canes that they all carried, and decided they must have set out for a walk. The closest of them, a handsome blonde-haired boy, smiled and said, "We're looking for the Ranger's apprentice." Will couldn't help smiling in return. After all, the Ranger cloak that he wore marked him unmistakably as an apprentice Ranger. But perhaps the battle school apprentice was only being polite. "Well, you found him," he said. "What can I do for you?" "We've brought a message from the battle school for you," the boy replied. Like all battle school trainees, he was tall and well-muscled, as were his companions. They moved closer to him now, and Will instinctively backed off a pace. They were a little too close, he felt. Closer than they needed to be to pass on a message. "It's about what happened at the boar hunt," said one of the others. This one was red-haired, with a heavy dusting of freckles, and a nose that showed distinct signs of having been broken. Probably in one of the training combats that battle school students were always practicing. Will shrugged uncomfortably. There was something in the air he didn't like. The blonde boy was smiling still, but neither the redhead nor their third companion, an olive-skinned boy who was the tallest of the three, looked as if they thought there was anything to smile about. "You know," Will said, "people are talking a lot of nonsense about that. I didn't do much." "We know," the red-haired boy snapped angrily. And again, Will took a pace back as they all moved a little closer. Halt's training was ringing alarm bells in his mind now. "Never let people get too close to you," he'd been told. "If they try to, be on your guard, no matter who they are or how friendly you think they are. But when you go swanking around, telling everyone you saved a big, clumsy battle school apprentice, you make us look foolish," the tall boy accused. Will looked at him, frowning. "I never said that," he protested. "I..." And at that moment, while he was distracted by Bryn, Alden made his move, stepping quickly forward with the sack held open to throw it over Will's head. It was the same tactic they had used so successfully with Horace. But Will was already on his guard, and as the other boy moved, he sensed the attack and reacted. Unexpectedly, he dived forward toward Alder, rolling in a somersault that took him under the sack, then letting his legs sweep around, scything Alder's legs from under him, so that the bigger boy was sent sprawling. But there were three of them, and that was too many for him to keep track of. He'd evaded Alder and Bryn, but as he rolled to his feet, completing the movement, Jerome brought his cane around in a ringing crack across the back of his shoulders. With a cry of pain and shock, Will staggered forward,
as Bryn now brought his cane around and hit him across the side. By then, Alder had regained his feet, furious with the way Will had evaded him, and he struck Will across the point of the shoulder. The pain was excruciating, and